Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
You are now listening to the Pat's Pulpit Podcast.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pat's Pulpit Podcast. I am Alex Shane here, as always, on this Victory Tuesday with my good buddy Rich Hill, breaking down Patriots, Cardinals, and all things that were in Week 12 of the NFL season as this season limps to a ridiculous Rich, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, doing well, since it's always good when the Patriots win. It's just hard. This was one of the weirdest wins, Alec, that I've ever seen. I can't really recall another win by the Patriots that just seemed so confounding, in the sense that how did they win that? That was one of the worst offensive displays I've ever seen by the Patriots in the past two decades, and they still managed to find a way to win. So I'm just scratching my head mostly.
Yeah, I guess if I had to think back, there was maybe 2003, there was a Patriots-Cleveland game that they won like 9-3 on three Adam Vinatieri field goals, where they were just fumbling all the time, and it was just a really sloppy game all around. The defense played well, and the offense just couldn't move the ball past the 30-yard line. Maybe that's the closest comparison. But yeah, once again, Rich, we were spectacularly wrong in our predictions. The Patriots pulled out a win when everyone had them losing. The Cardinals are one of the better teams in the NFC. The offense was terrible. Defense looked great. Special teams were good. So this is kind of a classic old-school Patriots victory where the offense did just enough to win it, and they got some help through some interesting penalties and ridiculous calls, which we'll talk about toward a little later on. But first, I want to go around the league here, Rich. It was a interesting week of NFL football in that there were two games on Thanksgiving, both of which saw 41 points scored by the winning team. There was a game that probably shouldn't have happened because there was literally not a quarterback able to dress, and the Broncos were trying to convince a coach to suit up. They had to call up a practice squad wide receiver and put him under center out of sheer desperation. The Browns managed to win a game despite not really throwing for any yards and having a negative point differential on the season. The Falcons suddenly put up 40-plus points. Very strange week in the NFL, Rich.
Oh, totally. Maybe even to start off, Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn of the Detroit Lions, former Patriots, have been fired from the Lions. Terrible. They did a terrible job up in Detroit. They took what was a fringe playoff team under Jim Caldwell and just ran them to the ground. So this Lions team fell to the Texans, who now all of a sudden look really good. It makes the Patriots' loss last week seem not as bad. But yeah, I think the big story of this week, outside of Tyreek Hill going for over 200 yards and a couple touchdowns in the very first quarter against the Buccaneers, is that Denver Broncos team. They had all four of their quarterbacks on the roster placed on the COVID list prior to the game. They had to call up, as you said, that practice squad wide receiver Kendall Hinton, who was in retail sales at the beginning of November. He is someone who played as a backup quarterback in college at Wake Forest. He couldn't win the starting job. He broke out as a wide receiver in his senior year after a position switch. And he's been like a couple weeks on this practice squad team. They've had maybe, as he said, 10% of the playbook accessible to them. He completed one pass. And honestly, he played better quarterback than a lot of other quarterbacks in the league. So good on him.
Yeah. No, Mitch Trubisky's probably shaking his head right now, wondering what the hell's going on with his career. And if I'm the Broncos, I understand it. But if there was ever a proof positive moment that the NFL treats their quote-unquote money teams differently than the rest of the league. The ones that have profitable players, the ones that gave the big market money, they will treat those teams differently. It was the Patriots for a very long time, so it's not like we can sit here and cast aspersions. But if I'm the Broncos watching the Steelers-Ravens game get postponed again and again and again as 20 players plus are placed on the COVID list just so they can get Lamar Jackson playing in a primetime game, I'm furious this morning. And honestly, if I'm the rest of the NFC watching the Saints, who are currently the one seed in the NFC, get handed a win through no fault of their own, I'm also furious. This is not a great look for the league.
Oh, not at all. And then ultimately, this game has been pushed to a Wednesday between the Ravens and Steelers, and it's going to be at 3:40 p.m. It's going to be an early afternoon game because there's a Christmas tree lighting ceremony that afternoon that they can't change. So this was the only time they had available. And it's just, as you said, it's just such an obvious money grab that, you got to put the reigning MVP in prime time. I guess it's no longer prime time anymore, but you can't just keep postponing them. Honestly, though, we're at a point where we saw this with the Titans earlier in the year. We're seeing it with the Ravens right now, that if your team is in a spot where you're unable to play because of the recklessness of your own players, we could throw the Raiders into this as well, as they were having like that celebrity benefit the week after the Patriots game. If you're actively going out of your way to not follow the protocol guidelines, and as a result, people are contracting COVID, you should be required to forfeit your game at a
I
minimum.
agree with
You
that.
should be
Agreed.
fined more than just a seventh round pick like the Saints were, and like a mid round pick. Like, the fact that the league is just responding with just like a sniff in the direction of these teams shows that they don't really care, and they need to absolutely just bring down the hammer as much as possible at any team that is not following the protocols. And instead, they're just saying, you know what? We're just going to keep moving it down the road just to get the game in prime time. That's it.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I agree with that completely. The only negative, I guess, is you forfeit a game. I believe the team that you're supposed to play against doesn't get their paycheck for that week, which is tough for the guys that actually did follow protocols, but maybe there's a way you can work around that. But again, I think the NFL did a really lousy job preparing for this. They knew it was going to be some snafus. They didn't really bake in a couple extra bye weeks. They could have kind of avoided all this by just being a little more diligent and thinking about the players over the profit, but that's never going to happen. That's just how it is. The league's gone full heel. And you know what? I feel like a hypocrite complaining because I still watch Patriots games. I was watching this Sunday as the Patriots took on the Cardinals and beat them somehow, 20-17 on a last second Nick Folk field goal. The defense looked great, like we talked about, but let's start with the offense, Rich, because there's two words to describe the offense, or two letters to describe the offense, I should say, P and U. PU, horrible. Cam Newton was 50% throwing, 84 yards, and two interceptions. That's a stat line of a winning quarterback never in the National Football League. Their leading rusher was Damien Harris, who looks good for only on 47 yards rushing. The leading receiver was Jakobi Meyers again, but after that, it was a whole lot of nothing, and N'Keal Harry once again was a ghost. How did the Patriots pull out a win with this offense being so putrid?
Yeah, I mean, N'Keal Harry finished the day four opportunities, so three targets and a rushing attempt. -2 yards on the day. That's brutal. I mean, like, sure, he's helping as a run blocker, but at this point, you just got to transition him to that move tight end spot. Just convert him into Trey Burton-esque. You're an undersized tight end, but you're just going to be playing off tackle. He's just not a wide receiver at this point in time. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how the Patriots managed to win, because you look at how they put points on the board. Their final drive, notwithstanding, which really benefit from that unnecessary roughness penalty that gave them an extra 15 yards. Their 17 points prior to that drive came on the three drives where they started in Cardinals territory. They got a touchdown off of a drive where they started on the 46-yard line, thanks to a great kick return from Dante Moncrief. They got a field goal drive they started from the 39-yard line. That was after Gunnar Olszewski kick return that should have been a touchdown, but there is that super wonky rule of blindside block that Alec, what happened there? That was just dumb.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I listened to, I think it was Dean Blandino, what was called in to break it down. And technically, again, this is one of those things where, by the letter of the law, as the NFL becomes more and more of a ridiculous league in terms of the rules, like, the refs got it right, because I guess he was facing back towards his own end zone. And what he was supposed to have done literally was just stand there and let the plowing, I think it was a linebacker up again, like this 200-plus-pound linebacker at full speed plow him over. That's how you avoid a penalty there. And the fact that that is the case is just ridiculous. That's very similar, not exactly, but it's very similar to that amazing block that Michael Floyd threw to bring Julian Edelman for a 70-plus-yard touchdown back in 2016, I believe. Now different. I get it. You're going for player safety, but I don't understand whenever you are kind of erring on the side of player safety, it always comes on at the expense of the defense, of special teams. Like, I don't care if the defense gets laid out, as long as the receivers and the quarterback are healthy, because that's where the points are, that's where the money is. Another good example of the league not really caring and doing only what looks good optically, but not really thinking it through.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's a situation where maybe they'll have to coach it like basketball in the future, where you got to teach them to take the charge in a way. But like, you're moving at a completely different speed with different paths than in basketball. So I don't really know. Like, you can't just expect them to, like, get out of the way or just, like, you know, guide them out, because then you'll get a holding call. So what can they do about it? I don't know. That was just a ridiculous penalty. But you know what? It set up the Patriots for another field goal. They should have been getting a touchdown out of it. And then, you know, their subsequent drive, they got they started on the 31-yard line of the Cardinals due to a deflected pass that Adrian Phillips, who has been fantastic for the Patriots this year at safety, really good job getting former safeties from the Chargers. You know, good pedigree there, a little bit of Rodney, little Steve Gregory, now Adrian. Like, they're doing a really good job. Starting on the 31-yard line, and they got a touchdown. Those were their 17 points. They all started on the Cardinals' territory. They just couldn't get anything going outside of those drives.
No, they couldn't, and it was the situation where, again, I'd love to know. Now, we always talk about chemistry with wide receivers and rapport and having trust. And it seemed that early on in the season, Cam Newton was going to N'Keal Harry a decent amount, and he was really trying to get involved in the offense. Seems to have more or less shied away from that now and given up on him. Jacoby Myers is the guy. He's the number one receiver. He almost always leads the team in receptions. Damir Bird is the number two. Again, I don't think either of them are a number one or number two receiver. But here we find ourselves, and I'm very curious to know how much of it is just Cam Newton's play versus him just not having the weapons versus him just not really trusting those guys.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. There was one play in particular with N'Keal Harry. It was on a 3rd and 14, I believe, that he threw an incomplete pass, obviously, because N'Keal Harry didn't get a catch. But he was telling him in the middle of the play, Cam Newton was pointing at N'Keal Harry saying, go to the sticks, go to the sticks, go to the sticks, because it's third down, and if you don't get to the sticks, we're punting, so just go. And Harry just firmly planted himself like 3 yards shy of the first down, and he was bracketed by three defenders. And it's just like, where is your football IQ right there if that is how you're approaching that type of situation? He struggles to get any separation from a defender whatsoever, and you're not even putting yourself in a position where a jump ball would be successful. So if you're not getting separation, you need to win on physicality. And if you're winning on physicality, you need to get no yards after the catch. And if you're not going to get yards after the catch, you got to get to the sticks on third down. And it's just a really obvious case of things just not clicking with Harry and him just not having an understanding of what he needs to do in order to be successful in this offense. And this is something that I don't think it's, you know, the result of having a truncated offseason. I think it's just the fact that, you know what, he's doesn't fit in with this Patriots offense, and they don't know what to do with him, and he's out there because he's a very good run blocker, and the Patriots' entire identity is running the ball. But you know, when they're only getting 3.7 yards per carry, you gotta say, you know what, maybe it's just worth putting an extra offensive lineman on the field as opposed to a N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a first round pick, and I'm sure that has something to do with it as well. But if you're a rookie receiver, you want to show flashes and you want to have some good moments, which I think he did his rookie season, and you want to build on that. And I'm not willing to pull the plug on him yet, but to expect at this point a massive jump between this year and next year, just not going to happen. He's going to be the B word coming sooner rather than later, and that's kind of just the way it is, which means the Patriots have a lot of thinking to do this offseason, especially if Julian Edelman, who's on IR and now got the double secret IR, which is the IR / COVID list he's now on, they're going to be without a legit kind of receiving threat outside Jacoby Myers come next year, and so they have a lot of thinking to do. Unfortunately, that's just the case, and I'll be very curious to see what happens to them this offseason for quarterback, running back. They're pretty set there, but I don't know. The good news is, Rich, the defense was phenomenal yesterday. I was very worried about the defense when the Cardinals marched down the field in, what, like three plays?
after that interception, and then they marched down the field in about 12 plays to score again on their first two possessions, but they really tightened up. They extremely limited Kyler Murray with his legs. He was not a threat at all. DeAndre Hopkins was more or less shut down by Stephon Gilmore. The defense had a phenomenal game plan yesterday on Sunday, and executed it very well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was very impressed with how they did it. Mainly, I want to start with Stephon Gilmore and his locking down of DeAndre Hopkins. He's had Hopkins' number for many years now. Ever since he's joined the Patriots, he's done a great job of limiting DeAndre Hopkins, who is one of the best wide receivers in the league. And the Patriots trusted him out there. He did a great job. Hopkins got his. You know, he's still a great receiver, but 55 yards on five catches, not all of them with, Stephon Gilmore in coverage. I think I saw one of them with, you know, it might have been Bentley in coverage. They got Hopkins in the slot on linebacker coverage. So, you know, not all of that was against Gilmore. And the Patriots did a great job taking away their top option. And Jason McCourty did a great job, J.C. Jackson did a great job against Christian Kirk, limiting him to just 19 yards on three catches. So the Patriots secondary did a great job making sure that there wasn't any production from this very good passing attack. It's just a matter of, okay, Kenyon Drake got his. He did a very good job of running the ball where the Patriots had a little bit of a softer underbelly, but there's kind of a give and take there. And I was kind of impressed, Alec, and I'm interested in your opinion. Adam Butler, he had a great day out there.
Yeah, he was probably the best player on the field for the Patriots, possibly on the best field on the field for the Patriots or the Cardinals. Just dominant up the middle, chased down tackles from behind. They moved him around the line a little bit. I don't know where he's been all season, but he took advantage of the opportunities he was given. Really impressed with that guy. I agree.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so he was very disruptive up front, and it gave the Patriots an opportunity at that second level to still compete. You know, Kyler Murray was pretty much contained, 31 rushing yards on five attempts. One of those was on 15 yards. So the Patriots did a very good job of keeping him in the backfield. Major kudos, again, Adrian Phillips. He was my, one of the defensive stars for the Patriots. So I think that the Patriots' defensive game plan came and started with making sure that Kyler Murray couldn't escape, that he couldn't win or extend drives with his legs, and then making sure that Hopkins couldn't take over the game. And with those two things, Gilmore did his job. Adrian Phillips did his job stopping Kyler Murray. And that just kind of set up the rest of the day for success where, you know, even though the Patriots weren't able to get anything going on offense, neither were the Cardinals, despite the fact that, you know, that huge, huge, huge goal line stand right prior to the half just rings so important because the Patriots were only able to win because they stopped them on downs for the goal line stand right before the half.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a 7 points, and then they get the ball back start the third quarter. So that could have basically iced the game, that stand right there. Again, this is an old-school Patriots win. The only thing that really separates, I think, the old-school Patriots versus the 2020 Patriots is when the Patriots defense and special teams were keeping them in the game and giving the offense opportunities to score, we'd find scenarios in days of old where Tom Brady would get the ball back down three or down four with 2 minutes left, and he'd drive down the field and kick a field goal or score a touchdown to win. When Cam Newton has the ball with a game-winning drive on the line, he's probably going to throw a pick. Probably what we've seen. And it happened again against the Cardinals. He threw the interception, a pretty key one, and luckily the Cardinals missed that extra point, or that field goal, which gave him another second chance of life. But that wasn't like the Patriots did enough to win there. The Pats definitely got some breaks, and I just don't think that if we're in a scenario ever where when Tom Brady got the ball with down four, down three, with X number of minutes left, I was always very confident he'd put them at least in position to win. They might not punch it in the goal line. They might miss the field goal, but he'd get down there, and it would be at least maybe last minute going one way or the other. When Cam Newton gets the ball late with a game-winning drive on the table, I'm like, well, they're going to turn this one over, or if it's going to be fourth down, he's going to overthrow it. That's kind of how the Patriots go. Luckily, they got bailed out by that roughing the passer call, and Nick Folk, man, has been a godsend this
season.
Seriously. I feel like he's like the leading scorer on the team. I've got no stats to back that up, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, too, he's been able to, what is it? He's on like a 19-kick streak or something like that, something exceptional where they mentioned it at the beginning of the game. He connected on that field goal to start the second half, and they're like, oh, wow, that's his, like, 18th in a row. And I was just like, oh, man, here we go. They're setting this up for just the most obvious jinx, but it didn't work. 50-yard field goal from someone who we had all thought at the beginning of the year just didn't have the leg anymore to go beyond 40 yards. That's fantastic. He's been so important for the Patriots, and, you know, the Patriots seem to always get lucky with figuring out who is going to carry this team from a kicker perspective. Folk seems to be that guy. Really great job from him. I mean, honestly, special teams was the name of the day for the Patriots, with Gunnar Olszewski doing such a great job on that. Dante Moncrief with a great return. And then Jake Bailey, too. There was that one punt that started the Cardinals on the 3-yard line. That was enormous. You know, I mean, he'd only punted, I believe, 3 times on the day. 2 of them just were not from great field position. 1 of them was from their own 20-yard line, so it was just going as far as you can. But that one field goal where they kicked from right around midfield, pinning them at the 3-yard line, that just honestly, again, held them to a field goal. Every yard mattered in this game. So great job by the special teams unit.
Yeah, it's funny. I never know how I'm supposed to feel when I hear that your team's punter is having a great season, because they're punting. They're punting all the time. He's doing so well. So I'm like, yay, good for Jake Bailey. But I guess you take what you can get in 2020. I mean, we'll take a win. And with this win, the Patriots now move to 5-6, 1 game away from 500. Their playoff hopes skyrocketed from 8% chance of winning, getting to the playoffs, to 12% mm-hmm. chance getting to the postseason. They are currently still 10th in the AFC. They do have some tiebreakers over some playoff-bound teams. They have tiebreakers over the Dolphins. They have tiebreakers over the Raiders, tiebreakers over the Ravens. However, with these last 5 games on the slate being the Chargers, the Rams, and then 3 AFC East games, Bills, Dolphins, and Jets. I don't know if necessarily that's the order, but those are the last 5 games on the season. Patriots are pretty much going to have to run the table, get to 10-6, get a little bit of help to sneak into one of those wild card spots. And I'm curious, Rich Hill, do you think the Patriots can run the table, and do they have a shot in the postseason?
No. No, they don't have a chance in the postseason. I don't know. I mean, if you just watch any of the other games from the contenders, you watch a Chiefs game, you watch even just a Packers game, and you're just like, oh, this Patriots team would get smoked by them at this point in time. And I think that's still the case. I mean, there's just not a way that the Patriots can go punch for punch with a team that has any semblance of a starting quarterback or an offense. And this is, I mean, sure, they stopped a good offense with the Cardinals. They did a great job there. If you're winning based off of a couple kick returns, you know, a kick return and a punt return, that's not sustainable. This the way that the Patriots beat the Cardinals was a 1 in 100 chance sort of scenario. You do not win games where your quarterback does not crack 100 yards, where they turn over the ball multiple times. You just don't win those. And so this is not a team that can run the table. And you look at their upcoming schedule. They are going to do a West Coast trip, starting on the road against the Chargers on Sunday. Then they're on the road on Thursday, so a short week against a good Rams team. And then they stay on the road, and they play the Miami Dolphins, a good Miami Dolphins team. 3 teams that are very good, or at least have a lot of talent in the sense of the Chargers right there, and they're all on the road. And the Patriots only have 1 road victory this year. 1 road game victory, and it was a short travel game against the hapless New York Jets. So this is not a Patriots team that has been traveling well. The idea that they can go for the rest of the year without a loss, especially as they're about to embark on a 3-game road trip, is something that I would not ever put money on.
No, I agree with that. You know, I think that the floor of this team, unfortunately, I might look right in saying the floor of this team's 9-7. I think 4-1 is probably the best they're going to be able to finish this season. I won't get into which games they're going to win, which games they're going to lose yet, but maybe they go 3-2. I can see that happening. I can see them going 2-3. I can see them going 1-4. They're not going 0-5 because the Jets are on the table, and there's just no way they're going to beat the Jets, especially with the Jets at 0-11. I think now are actively trying for that perfect season of 0-16. So I think the Patriots are going to finish between 8-8 and 9-7 here. Maybe 6-10. I just don't see them finishing that low. I think they get at least 2 of the last 5. But even if they run the table, they go 10-6. I still don't know if that's going to be enough to sneak into the postseason as a wild card. And I agree with you, Rich. If they do sneak in for whatever reason, they get some help and they leapfrog some teams, I think it's going to be a very quick out. So I don't want to be one of those people that, like, well, if you're not going to win the Super Bowl, you may as well just go for the draft pick, because that kind of defeats the whole purpose of watching sports. It's like Super Bowl or bust is not really an attitude we can have anymore. Mm-hmm. But if they do sneak into the playoffs, it's going to be a pretty short run. And I'm not overly excited to watch them have to go to, say, if they magically make it to Kansas City and just get kind of demolished by a Chiefs team that just needs to be able to score at will.
Right? Yeah, I mean, like, those are their options. If they come in at as the 7 seed, they will be playing either the Steelers if they lose down the stretch, or the Chiefs. Maybe they'll even get up to the 6 seed if because they have a lot of those tiebreakers. They would just play the Titans and or the Bills, and I don't think either of those are good situations for the Patriots, especially if, you know, as you said, Edelman, will he be available for the rest of the year? If he stays out, then there is no cavalry on its way. So this is a very, very, you know, not beneficial postseason opportunity for the Patriots. But again, you know, they hire a team, as you said before this podcast, that are kind of the definition of average. And I'm going to copy what you said. They are a team that can beat the teams they're supposed to win. They lose to teams that they're supposed to lose to. They beat some teams that they're supposed to lose to, and they lose to some teams that they're supposed to beat. They have games in all of those categories this season. And that means, who knows? I think that there are certain teams that are above that. I think that the Chiefs team is absolutely above that. They are not necessarily a team that will just lose to bad teams. So I kind of think that they win that chess match against the Patriots. I might put the Steelers in that category, but I still don't know if they're actually good or not, or if they just really benefit from a easy schedule and they've kind of been fortunate on some of their matchups. And then maybe the Titans fall into that one, but I'm not sure. I mean, I just think that when it comes to the Steelers and Chiefs, that they are going to be representing the AFC. And, you know, maybe the Patriots can make some noise early in the playoffs. That would be fun. That would be fun to see them knock out the Bills or get some revenge against the Titans for last season. That would kind of be funny to see Cam Newton be able to do that. But I'm not holding out any hope for that.
Nor am I, Rich. I think the best thing we can do and the smart play going forward for these last 5 games is trying to see if the young guys can keep building, see if Damian Harris can keep running the ball well, look at the development of the skill players, and think towards next year which of these guys are going to be kind of the next core unit of the team and which ones are going to be sent packing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the rest of the year should be. Figure out who is on the roster. What do they have? What can they bring to the table? And I feel like we're learning a lot. Alec, you know, maybe let's close out on this. I think at this point, we're learning a lot about who is on the Patriots. You know, I think Jacoby Myers is a good receiver piece. I think Damian Harris is a fantastic receiver piece. I think Michael Onwenu is a very good piece. Who's a player that over these final 6 weeks, you really want to get a better sense of on whether or not they are a piece for the future?
I think for me, it's not necessarily a newer guy, but I'd love to know what the Patriots are planning to do with Jason McCourty. I feel like he's been very streaky. I think he's still a good player. I think he's a valuable piece to the secondary. But given the emergence of J.C. Jackson and Jonathan Jones and Juwan Bentley, I don't know if he's going to be a long-term guy. So I'd love to see what they're going to do with him in terms of his long-term future with the team. I'm not sure if he's going to be sticking around and if they're going to let Devin go and Jason go at the same time. I know Devin McCourty's still locked up for a while still, but I'm very curious on that. I'd also love to see what they're going to do with the young linebackers, with Chase Winovich and Juwan Bentley, and if Terrez Hall is going to stick around. He's been called up for a while. I know with Dante Hightower out and with all the trades and the free agency departures, they're really weak at the linebacker position. So I'm very curious to see if they think that any of the linebackers they have outside of Juwan Bentley are going to be the guy going forward, or if they're going to more or less reset that position once Hightower comes back and try to find some guys via trades and free agency next year.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, that's also like a if Hightower comes back. I'm looking at the players that are setting out for COVID. Is Hightower going to come back? Is Chung going to come back? Is Cannon going to come back? Those are three players who, you know, throw in Devin McCourty there as well. These are players that have flirted with the idea of retirement over the past couple of years. So we'll see. I mean, we will see if they come back. My pick is Gunnar Olszewski. I think that kick return was fantastic. And he seems to make some plays happen when he has the ball in his hands. They just haven't necessarily had all of the opportunities to do that. And so I would love to see if he can become a more active piece of this offense in a way that, you know, he just hasn't been given the opportunity to do. But, you know, I don't need to see much more of N'Keal Harry unless they're still going to get a little bit more creative and switch his role and give him something else to do in the offense. I want to see Gunnar Olszewski. I want to see what he's able to do.
That's great. And I'm sorry to hear you've kind of given up on N'Keal Harry, but I can't really blame you. I'm not quite there yet, but I can now see the other side and how much fun it is to knock this guy, because he's had plenty of time at this point and he's just not really getting it done now. And if he somehow manages to emerge, I will gladly eat my words. But I think we're going to see a very, very different Patriots team in terms of personnel this time next season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There will be a lot of changes to be made. Patriots will have a lot of cap space. They'll have a lot of flexibility. So, yeah, see who's worth keeping around. See if they have the good pieces. I love what they've been doing with Kyle Duggar, giving him a bigger opportunity to showcase what he's able to do. I think the Patriots are in good hands at that safety spot. I think he will be a fantastic long-term replacement for Patrick Chung. So they do have the pieces there. Maybe even Jonathan Jones will be the long-term replacement for Devin McCourty. I would love to see that. So there is a lot to see, but that will be for the next 6 weeks of the season as the Patriots close out the year. Alec, do you have any final thoughts on week 12 of the NFL season?
You got to win. We'll take it, buddy.
All right. Well, until next time, Alec, you have a good one.
See ya.
Later.